I'd like to introduce tonight's speaker, Joe C. from San Diego. Welcome, Joe. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Joe Conroy, alcoholic. Thank you, Dan and Jerry. My friend Alfred asked me to mention his name. He gave me $5, so. Alfred's been one of my longest friends. You know, I met Alfred a long time ago. Every time he, $5, that's 15 already, Alfred. So. No. You know, welcome, Cody, the one newcomer, and the 50 others that have a slip up here. You know, it's the only reason why we ask you for your name is so we can get to know you. That's the only reason, guys. You know, you don't have to hide out in Alcoholics Anonymous, our gals. And if we get to know your name, we'll get to see you at a meeting and use your name rather than just, hey, I saw you at a meeting. It's, you know, Cody. You'll run into Cody again, and hopefully you'll be able to find, you'll find the joy that we have in here. You know, I've been sober since January 1st of 1989. I drove all the way down from Little Italy to get here, so I should get a big cat pat in the back, you know. I love being sober. If you're new in here tonight, you're not there, you know, hopefully something, was it Liz that took the 31 years? You know, something Liz said, or some of the new people that are here, and you know, you get a chance to say hi to somebody, and you get a chance to let them know who you are, your life will change if you surrender. That's really the whole thing about here, surrendering first to the fellowship, because I hated Alcoholics Anonymous when I got here. I really did. I'm the type of drunk who sat at home drinking to go get drunk. I didn't know that was one of the 100 forms of fear of self-delusion. You know, it's really that the sitting at home drinking to go drinking is like, wow, I don't know anybody else that, I know a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that do that, but normal drinkers don't do that. You know, they go have a drink, and then they go home and have a nap. And then, you know, have a dinner, and then have a night's sleep. Alcoholics, oh, man. You know, I love drinking to this day, so I'm going to talk about drinking first. Sometimes I don't talk enough about drinking. And I want to say hi to Roger over there as well. I've known Roger for a long time, and it's always a pleasure to run into him in Alcoholics Anonymous, knowing he's been here a long time and keep coming back. Now, I'm not going to tell you if you guys are new how long he's been sober, but he's here. You didn't have to say that either. So. But it's just such a joy, you know, to see him in here. Now, there's a woman, Joan S., that's actually tomorrow is going to turn 68 years sober. And she lives up in Claremont, and she's still going to meetings. She goes to 2 meetings a week now because she's on a wheelchair, but 68 years sober. That's a long time. I am 68 years old, you know. It's like, that's a long time to be sober and to keep coming back here. So if you're new, I hope something I say or somebody else says just keeps you coming back to another meeting. That's all we have. That's all our job is, you know, and to get you to this place where you can be happy, joyous, and free. You know, I saw Milton Giverson's plaque. I remember I used to go to the Pathfinder Sunday morning, and Milt used to come to that every Sunday morning. He says, my name is Milton Merrill Joseph Giverson III. He would announce his whole name, you know, and he would talk there. And he used to live out in El Cajon, and he used to drive to Golden Hill on Sunday mornings. And he had a cane, and the cane was a white cane. Milt was legally blind, and he drove from El Cajon to Golden Hill every Sunday morning. So these newcomers would watch this guy pull up and park in a handicap spot. Oh, he's handicapped, and he gets out with a white cane. And they go, and he's blind? Yeah, he's blind too, you know, and it's like, but he kept showing up, and he actually helped start this place, you know, years ago. And the memories of him and the memories of people that were here when I first got sober is really powerful for me. So if you, that's why I'm kind of hounding on this. If you get a chance to let us know who you are, we'll invite you into the fellowship, and your life will change. And the person that you said hello to will change as well. That's really what this one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic is all about. I'll get into a little history now because my head is going crazy. So, you know, 90 years ago, is it 80, 85 at 90? I forget now. 90 years ago, Bill Wilson, with 6 months sober, was walking around Akron, Ohio, and he was wanting to drink. And he needed to find somebody to help him not to drink. Now, this is the paradox of Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill was the only sober person, and there was no such thing as Alcoholics Anonymous. It's back in 1934 when he got sober and into 35. And he's the only person that was never really was sober, but not in the state that we are talking about right now. And he was wanting to take a drink, and he says, I better find somebody I can help, you know. And he found this broken down proctologist in Akron, Ohio, and all of a sudden this, you know, two guys that had no idea they would meet, and they were both from Vermont, And they met in Akron, Ohio, and they started talking about a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. One was telling his story, like I'm doing tonight, to another guy. He wasn't there to tell the guy what he needed to do. He was there to tell the guy what he needed to do. The alcoholic who tells his story is talking about what he needs to do, what I need to do to stay sober today. And that's all this is. This is a place of being of maximum service. So when I go back to you guys saying, what is your name? If you can tell us who you are, something happens. This when one alcoholic says hi to another alcoholic, something happens. Liz just said that, something happens. In the book, Alcoholics Anonymous says, when an alcoholic takes a drink, something happens. When an alcoholic takes a drink, something happens. If you've ever listened to the Joe and Charlie tapes, Joe McQuaney and Charlie Pomeli, they go into this long explanation of what happens when an alcoholic takes a drink. When it gets into a system and it breaks down into the system, it goes into the liver and it breaks down into the body. They go into this whole long, long-winded medical detail of what happens when an alcoholic takes a drink of alcohol. And he goes, thank God, Bill Wilson just said, when an alcoholic takes a drink, something happens. And we all know what that something happens is. It's a sense of ease and comfort. When taken at once, a sense of ease. The only thing that I see wrong with Alcoholics Anonymous, especially for you guys that are new, that it takes time. Taking a drink is quick. Getting into Alcoholics Anonymous is, if you want 30 years of sobriety, I'm going to tell you a trick. It's going to take 30 years. Tell you now, it took him 57 years to get 57 years. You know, nothing in Alcoholics Anonymous is going to happen fast. But if you stay here with your arms crossed, with the best stay away look on my face, you know what's going to happen? People are going to stay away from you. Your arms will stay crossed, and you won't get the gift that I've been given here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to sit at Pathfinders, and Milt used to get up every Sunday morning, and he says, you know, the first line in the 12th step of the 12 and 12 is joy of living is our code, but action is the key word. He used to say that every single Sunday morning, and I would cringe when I heard him say the joy of living is our code. And one time he came up to me, he says, Joe, I've noticed something. Every time I say the joy of living is our code and action is the key word, you cross your arms and you look down and you almost get angry. I said, I do get angry. He said, why? He says, because I hate the word joy. He says, why do you hate the word joy? I said, because I hate Christmas. Well, why do you hate Christmas? He says, because I had a really, really sad childhood. And he goes, oh, my God. And he started talking. He didn't try to take me through therapy. And he goes, did you ever think of turning the word backwards? I said, what word? He said, joy. I said, what do you mean turn it backwards? He says, just spell it backwards. I says, that spells yoj. He goes, yeah. I said, what does that mean? He says, I don't know, but it isn't joy, is it? And it was a really simple thing that the mind of the alcoholic, we want to, as my friend, my sponsor Ken says, we itch things that don't even scratch. I mean, we scratch things that don't even itch. Wow. We scratch things that don't even itch. Dr. Paul says we manufacture our own misery. You know, especially if you're working with new people. Liz talked about doing the 12th step. If you're working with new people, a new person, that if you're sponsoring somebody new, the first thing that you hear when you answer the phone is, oh, thank God. And I go, oh, Christ, here we go. What is it? You know, what is it? You know, oh, my God, they did, she did, he did. I can't believe this is it. I go, oh, my God, whoa, slow down. You know, like the newcomer's conversation starts long before they dial the number. And then they expect me to figure out what they're talking about because they're just nuts. And I go, whoa, slow down. Did you write anything out? No. You want me to pull it out of your head? No, I'm not going to do that. If you can actually, like you were talking about journaling is just a simple thing of just taking the crap that's going on inside your head and putting it on a piece of paper, not trying to analyze it, just write, stream of consciousness. Some of the crap that I've been writing lately is unbelievable. I go, wow, did that just come out of my head? And I'm going, wow, thank God. Think about it, the stuff that you kept in your head. If you're struggling with something and not talking to somebody in alcohol and not talking to anybody, communicate, just like if you're struggling with a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body and not letting anybody know, you are in control of a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. You cannot fix what you're doing with this head. It's really like crazy stuff. So when Milt said, turn this backwards, Joe, and then get it out of that, get that resentment out. And you know what Milt used to do? This is what you don't hear a lot of people do anymore. He used to write letters. he would actually hear you share in a meeting. He would get your address, because this is way back when we had phone books. And you could look up somebody's name, and their address was there. It's like Google is like, man, this is kind of a top secret thing now. Google has a, we can get your address, but you have to go, you have to buy stuff to get people's address, you know? And he used to write a letter, hey, I just really want to thank you for what you shared at the meeting of the day. I really want to thank you for that moment that you gave me sitting out, going, walking out to the car. I really want to thank you just for showing up. There's something about that when somebody is thinking about you and you, when you don't want to be thought of. And I think that's what happened to me when I first got sober. Because I came in here and I was angry. God, I was angry. I didn't know it was just like this covering up, this feeling of inadequacy. I heard a guy this morning, you hear it all the time, I'm a egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I am not. I am an inferiority complex looking for an ego. That's really, I was so unhappy when I got here. And I would go to the meetings and I would just sit there and go, God, I can't stand this stuff. My first sponsor used to drag me to the La Jolla speaker meeting, which used to be on Saturday night. Like 7,000 people would go and they all were dressed like Dan. Everybody had a jacket and tie and just like, you were dressed to the nines. And he made me sit in the front row, right in front of the speaker. And I hated it. I was just so, I go, God, I can't stand this place. It was just, I just didn't fit. I didn't fit in my own skin. That's what I think, that when we hear that, I never fit in my own skin. We don't think we fit in a place, but it's really in our own skin. I come in into these places and I'm comparing myself to everybody. I think everybody, because they're in La Jolla, are La Jollaites. And then I find out they're all from Chula Vista or some other place. You know what I mean? It's like this perception that we have is just like they were just going to a meeting. They weren't living in La Jolla. But this is my, oh, my God, all these people live in La Jolla, you know? But the thing was I was just so uncomfortable being myself. I was just so unhappy. Because the drinking really made me feel really comfortable. When I tended bar in Boston for years. I didn't tell you, you probably already figured that out. I tended bar in Boston for years. And so I knew everybody in the city, and I lived in the city, and I would walk everywhere. But I still had that fear of like walking into a place and going, but they knew me. So that's what I would get loaded. I would sit at home, and I was listening at the time. I still listen to him, was Willie Nelson. He was into this torch song stuff, you know, Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain, and the Red-Headed Stranger from Blue Rock, Montana. And I would sit there and I would roll this little green stuff, you know, and I'd be sitting there going, and I would drink red crybaby wine. If you've ever drank, if you really want to feel depressed, drink red wine, you know, especially if it has a cork in it, because then you think it's really fancy. So I would start drinking this red wine, and I would drink this Italian, I lived in an Italian neighborhood, so I drank the red Italian wine, Valpolicella, right? I don't even know what it means, but it was red. And I would sit there, and I would be rolling these joints, and I would be listening to the redheaded stranger, you know. And then I would go, oh, my God, I got to make a phone call. And you know we've all got those phone calls, like from your drunk brother. And I would call my brother, who lived up here. And I'm in Boston. He's up in Santa Barbara. And it's 9 o'clock my time, so it's 6 o'clock back, yeah, out here. So, and he'd go, oh, my God, what's going on? And I go, oh, Jesus, Jerry. And he'd hear the music in the background. He'd go, oh, Willie's really picking you up tonight, isn't he? Yeah, I'm like, oh, Christ, I don't know what's going on, man. My life is really just kind of miserable. And he goes, wow, you're drinking red wine too, aren't you? I go, yeah, I am, man. It's like, oh, Christ. He goes, can you do me a favor? What is that? Can you put the cork in the bottle and maybe just go out? Oh, I can do that. Sure, I can do that. I didn't know. This is like an alcoholic, as Bill says, in his cups is one of the loneliest places to be. In his cups means all alone. All alone. And you know what I was writing in a journal drinking, Liz. And I remember writing one night, listening to Willie Nelson, and I go, where do all the lonely people go? It was, so, I still have this journal. It's so pathetic. Where do all the lonely people go? And when I get into Alcoholics Anonymous, this is where we come. This is really where we come. There's no question about it. Because you know, it's how about that new guy over there? You know, Corey, would you like to share? He's pretty happy. He ran into me. I thought I was in trouble. He ran into me out in the parking lot. But some of the newcomers, would you like to share? Well, would I? Oh, Christ, here we go again. You know, I just like everything's wrong. I can't get nothing right. Blah, blah, blah. Christmas is coming up. Christmas, it's in June. Yeah, but Christmas is coming up. I can't get presents for the kids. Christmas is in June. Yeah, I know, but I can't put money. Whoa, back it up. Can you get right here and right now? Oh my God, it's this? Yeah, this is it. But when we're drinking, I didn't have to worry about that sort of stuff. you know, and I tended bar for years in Boston, and then I just didn't like people. This is an awful thing to be. If you're a person of service and you don't like people, like literally, like they would call my bar was at 124 Boylston Street in Boston, and it was a comedy club. And these people would call for directions, and they go, "Hey, where are you located?" I says, "I'm standing right at the end of the bar." You know, it was this like, you know, and then they would go, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, "You already did." Just like, it was like, I don't want to have any conversations with you. And it was really, but those were the social people. The alcoholic never asks a question. The alcoholic never cares. I would start my shift at 5 o'clock, and that's the commuter hour. And that means people are waiting for their train, or they're waiting for the traffic to die down, or they're just waiting for their friend to get out of work. And they would come into the bar and they would have a drink. Most of them never finished the drink they had, but they would have a drink. And I would sit there and go, "How's your day?" "Oh, Christ, what time?" "I'm waiting for 9 o'clock, because everybody's gone by 9 o'clock. And then all of a sudden, the doors would start opening up, and the alcoholics would start showing up. And you know us, we're quiet when we get there. And they would walk in, and they would sit down, and their drink would be sitting right in front of them, because I knew what they were drinking every night. And they sat in the same seat every night. And they would sit there, and they would stare their drink. They would nod their head, and they would stare their drink. And they would take a sip, and they would put it down, and they would stare it again. And they would take, it was just a routine, and they would adjust their coats, and they would put their cigarettes down, and they would look at their watch. Give them another drink. And then they would, third one, and all of a sudden it was, "Bam, Joe, how are you doing, man? It's really good to see you. Christ, how are things going, man, huh? Really good to see you. Hey, Jack, how are you doing, brother?" And all of a sudden you'd hear the music. You hear that music, the alcoholic. It's just like especially in a bar room, everybody's talking and not a soul is listening to what's going on. The music gets turned up, the TV gets turned up. And if you think about it, that's the same thing that happens just before Dan stands up and starts the meeting. Think about the noise that was happening in this room just before he said, "Hello, everybody. This is the South Bay Pioneers Saturday Night Speaking Event." And all of a sudden, it's just this. Everybody sits, and we're just perfectly still for an hour and a half, whatever long it takes. It's just an amazing thing, because I love that. And then we listen to the music. And I think sometimes if you're new, you have to listen to the music till you can understand what the words are in here. And that's really what Alcoholics Anonymous is. We don't really know what's going to happen. If you're trying to figure this deal out, I was at a meeting this morning, I was talking about, if you're trying to figure this deal out, you're not living in faith. And I learned that one phrase, sitting in the front row of the La Jolla speaker meeting, when I was the angriest I was ever in my life. I was sitting at this meeting going, "I just can't stand being sober." And I was listening to this woman tell her story like I'm telling my story tonight. And I was like fidgety, and my sponsor's going, "Will you sit still?" And I just couldn't. There was nothing redeeming coming out of her mouth. It was just the worst share I've ever heard in my life. She was stupid. She was like not even funny. It was just unbelievable what was going on. He's saying, "Will you shut up?" I said, "I can't sit here any longer." And then she said, "I don't know if I've helped anybody in this room tonight." From the front row, I said, "You haven't helped me." She didn't hear a word I said, and he went, "Stop, shut up." And she says, "I'll tell you what, the one thing I know is if you're trying to figure out Alcoholics Anonymous, you're not living in faith." And my head went, boom. It literally exploded. And she said, one thing after that, she says, "The closest that you and I can get to God is in the search for God." I wanted the God of my mom's understanding. My mom was very, very Catholic. I didn't know what the God of my understanding was. And I think that's what happens in here when the big book says deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It's there, but it's covered up by pomp and circumstance and worship of other things. That's exactly the way I was feeling that night when that woman said that. The closest I can get to God is in the search for God. That pomp, that circumstance, that worship of other things, that's the stuff that comes out of the fourth step in that you write down. People go, "I'm so afraid to write a fourth step." You don't have to be afraid of the fourth step. You know everything that's in that fourth step. Everything that's there is in your head. The fifth step is the thing you have to reveal. People go, "Oh, how long did it take you to write a fourth step?" "Oh, my God, it took years. Why?" You know everything that's in there. It's the fifth step should take years because I don't want to tell you this stuff. You know, I don't want to tell you what I have to relieve myself of the bondage, you know, and that's really what this. So I would sit around here trying to find the loophole. Everybody is trying to find the loophole. Trust me. Even people with 57 years of sobriety are probably trying to find the loophole. And they're going to go, the only loophole I can find is the loophole into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Into the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, not out of the Alcoholics meeting. So you come in here and you just sit down. Ralph White up in L.A. says, come in, sit down, and sit all the way down. And come all the way in and sit all the way down. What a simple phrase. Come all the way in and sit all the way down. That's what that surrender is. You know, we want to hold on to that towel and go, no, I can figure this thing out myself. I don't need your help. I am so happy to be sober. God, I'm so happy to be sober. It's like Paul was saying this one. He said to his sponsor, how you doing? I'm happy. He says, well, you should tell your face, you know. But it's really, we just want to hold on to things. And if you're holding on, you're clinging. You're clinging to that bondage of self. This letting go is like, oh, my God, what happens if I let go? Well, you're going to be free. Free of what? Wowee. You know, I don't know. Ken used to say it's kind of like a snail on the back of a turtle. And the snail's going, wee. Because the turtle's just a little bit faster. You know, just a little bit faster. It's this disease of perception. If you think we all got it wrapped up together, you're going to be so disappointed. You're going to be, if we want anything more than sobriety, you'll be disappointed with Alcoholics Anonymous, really. I think a lot of people come in here and they think they're going to get money, power, prestige, and all you're going to get is the ability to be yourself. That's a big, big gift. That's a big gift. And the one thing that we don't really want, that's why I drank. I didn't want to be myself. I wanted to be something other than. I would sit there and pretend I was something other than. It was just really, really just a crazy way of life. And I come into AA and people go, how you doing? I had no idea how to answer that question. There was a woman at my Monday, and I used to go to the Mission Hills Monday night meeting. It was an 8:15 meeting. It's another little history thing of AA. I don't think there's many. Most of the meetings, the old meetings, that the first meetings that started in Alcoholics Anonymous started at 8:15 at night. If you would, a lot of them aren't in the schedule anymore, but there's a couple here and there. They go, why did they start at 8:15? They said, because central office used to close at 8, and it took 15 minutes to get to any meeting in the county. 8:15, they closed central office, and everybody would go to the meeting. So anyway, the Monday night Mission Hills meeting was started by Jim Burwell, who's the guy in the big book that talks about the God as you understand him. Where was I going with this? Oh, so I'm at this meeting. I don't like anybody, so I'm just miserable. And I'm in my year of sobriety. I'm focusing on my first year of sobriety because there's a bunch of new people here. And I'm at this meeting, and I'm just really uncomfortable, but I'm sitting second row. I wanted to get close to the front. And the woman in the front row, I can't think of her name. She used to come here. Her and her husband retired from the Navy, and they used to come to South Bay. But she used to sit in the front row, and she used to knit. Now, that doesn't seem like much of a big deal. She used to knit. But she used these metal knitting things. And if you're new, metal knitting things are really loud because that's all you're going to focus on. So she'd be sitting there knitting, and just a simple, she's like, oh, this is wonderful, knitting. But I'm hearing, and she would look up and she says, is this bothering you? Oh, no, no. And she would be, and it would really, I just thought, the problem is I was focusing on something that was disturbing me. And I think that's what happens in here. We focus on the things that aren't going to give us any joy. So I kept focusing on this negative. She finally looked up at me and she says, this is really bothering you. I said, yes, it is. She put it down and she started to talk to me. She opened the door to a conversation. She said, you're new here. I said, no, I'm not. I'm 6 months sober. That whole perception again. She says, well, how's it going? I said, oh, it's really great. We have a way of projecting negativity if you're new. Trust me. It's like, you know, it's what was that line? You know what the newcomer's saying. You know he's going to lie just because his lips are moving. But it's just like I was just so uncomfortable. And she says, tell me what's going on in your life. I literally couldn't have a conversation with anybody. I just would shut down. He says, do you have a sponsor? I didn't have. Did you go in a meeting? I go to this meeting. You work in the steps? No. Do I need that? No, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. So she gave me a cassette tape. This is 36 years ago. She gave me a cassette tape of a guy named Jack Brennan. I don't know if you guys tape it. There's a guy named Jack Brennan. He was from Brooklyn, New York. It was just a horrendous story. And you can Google his name, Jack Brennan from Brooklyn, New York. He was just a Brooklyn guy, you know, just one of these, and he was a gangster. But his story was horrendous. But he took me through what he was like, what happened, what he was like. Now, I was driving for Avis rental car. I was driving cars from here to LAX. This is 38 years ago. I would just drive cars back and forth. And I would listen to this guy all the way up. It was an hour and 27 minutes. And I would listen to him all the way back. And I would just hear the gifts. I would hear the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then she gave me a guy named Norm Alpe. And I started listening to him. And she started giving me all these cassettes. I didn't know what she was doing. She knew that I wasn't able to have a conversation with anybody about Alcoholics Anonymous. But she knew I could listen. I could listen to it. It's like she said, just put it in the car and listen to it. And I did that over and over and over and over again. And I would come back each week and I'd say, what do you got next? It wasn't anymore, I don't need your help. It was, what do you got next? It was just a simple, way of life. And I don't like saying the words, I need help. I don't like doing that because it seems like it's such a powerful thing to say to somebody that's surrendered. I can't really do this myself. So when you get connected with people, they know you can't say the word, and they would go, let's go to dinner. My head is going, I don't have any money. And they would say, did I ask you, do you have any money? Let's just go to dinner. And I go, well, how am I going to afford it? Well, I'll pay for it. I can't pay you back. I don't want you to pay me back. I want you to pay it forward. When? I don't care. I'm always trying to figure it out. She says, just relax and say, what do? She says, say thank you. Oh, Christ, no, I can't do that. You know, it's like, just say thank you, that's it. I don't want anything else. You don't want anything? No, I don't want anything. And these are the memories that I have of people when I got here. There was just an amazing group of people. There was another guy named Ron Wynn. And I used to go to another meeting, and every he would go, hey, we're all going to the movies, or we're going to Denny's, or we're going here, we're going there after the meeting. I said, sure, I'd love to go. I had no intention of going. I would say, I'd love to go. Sure, I'll go. And after a while, he said, Joe, can I ask you something? I said, sure. He says, every time we ask you to go somewhere, you say yes. I went, yeah, I know. He goes, but you never show up. Well, that's all right. No, it's not all right. He goes, if you keep doing that, people will stop asking. And then you'll have nowhere to go. Well, I said, what do? He says, it's much easier to change a no to a yes than it is to change a yes to a no. I went, what? He goes, if you want to go, don't want to go, just say no. He says, but all of a sudden you might go, geez, I think I might want to go. And then we'd love to have you. But what's going to happen is if you continue on this path, there'll be a time when nobody wants to ask you anything. And you'll be in bondage of self again in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's no place worse than being in AA alone. It is the loneliest. And I know a lot of people that come to AA and sit in the back row, and I just can't stand you people. I'm just here to get my slip signed. I'm just here to please the wife, please the boyfriend, please the girlfriend, please something other than my own self. And I'll tell you what, the guy that 12-stepped me in the banks of the Charles River back in 1988, he saw me with my arms crossed, and he said, Joe, I don't know if you're done drinking. I have no idea if you're done drinking. I know that I'm talking to you, and your arms are crossed, and you're looking down at the ground, and I don't think you're receiving anything. And I was receiving. I was just full of that fear. And he said, I don't know when the time will come, but when it does for you, if you have some power greater than yourself, you'll never have to take another drink as long as you live, Joe. And that was in November 1988. My sobriety date is January 1st of 1989. I was in Boston when he said that, November of 1988. It was just before Thanksgiving. And 2 days after Thanksgiving in 1988, I got in a car and I drove out here to California. I went to Santa Barbara first because that's where my brother was. But my destination was San Diego. I didn't know a soul here. I had a guy that knew a guy that knew a guy that started that Old Town trolley tours, it's downtown San Diego, those orange buses that take people around and go, oh, and this is the beautiful Whaley building, blah, 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 the North Park, whatever. And he said, they'll give you a job if you go there. And I said, sure, I could do that. So I came out here, I figured I was going to drive a bus. And I remember on just before Thanksgiving, just before New Year's Eve, I had to take I applied for the job and I had to take a physical. I said, I'm not going to worry about that. I'll be fine. So I went in, and I had a couple of Miller Lights before I went in there, and I didn't think anything of it. And they took a urinalysis test. Well, urinalysis is just to check for drugs, right? I don't have to worry about that. And on New Year's Day, I actually was living in my car. I was living in my 63 Ford Falcon station wagon that I bought for $500 up in Santa Barbara. And the only Spanish I really ever knew for the longest time was Casa de Jose, because I lived in that car, and my brother go, how's the Casa de Jose doing? So that was like, I lived in that car over in Ski Beach. I thought I was going to be a surfer. I've never been on a board in my life, and it was just, but I was alone. So where was I going with that? I forget now. Wow. So January 1st, 19. I took that little thank you. Thank you guys for listening. I'm just checking. You know what I mean? I'm getting to that age where whoa. Okay. So January 1st, 1989. I got a call from actually on New Year's Day that I didn't want to sleep in the car, so I got a room at the Downtown Inn, which was at the corner of 6th and G downtown. 36, 37 years ago, downtown San Diego, nobody lived downtown. There were some wonderful places to drink. Oh, my God, there were some wonderful. They call them joints, or, you know, the Texans call them, but just some great, just, you know, those bars that just stank. They just stank, you know, and you smell them for a block down, and they're just nasty. Oh, I loved them. I absolutely loved them. So I didn't want to sleep in the car that night, so I got a room at the Downtown, and it was $19.95. I'll never forget it. So nobody was living downtown way back then. But I got this room at the Downtown Inn, and this guy had left, because that was my address. I told him that was my address, just temporary, because I'm trying to find a place to live in La Jolla. You know what I'm talking about? He left a message, give me a call in the morning, and I called him on New Year's Day. And he said, Joe, I got some terrible news to tell you. We'd love to hire you, but you had too much alcohol in your system when you took your urinalysis. I went, what? And I hung up the phone, and all I could remember was, Joe, there'll come a time when you're done with drinking, and you ask some power greater than yourself to help you. You'll never have to take another drink as long as you live. And I remember sitting there in my journal, Liz, and I went, my God, I am an alcoholic. Three words that I shouldn't have said, I need help. And that was it. There was no bright light. There was nothing that happened along the way. There was just this. Was there a sense of relief? I was like, I had no idea what to do. I hadn't got a clue to what to do. I didn't really know about Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew that there was something called Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't know, other than Dick D, that 12-stepped me. He had 12 years of sobriety, but I was never introduced to the fellowship. I was introduced to a person in the fellowship, but I never knew what that was about. And I remember going to a phone booth. Remember those days when I went to a phone booth? It was up in Hillcrest. And I went to a phone booth and I called my brother, Jerry, the one that I used to call drunk. He goes, dude, what's going on? I said, Jerry, I'm in trouble. He says, what's going on? I says, I'm an alcoholic. He said, God dang, it's about time you figured that one out, you know? I was like, what? What were you talking about? He goes, hang on a minute. I don't know nothing about this. And he put his wife on the phone. She had been a member of Alateen when she was a kid. And I didn't know this. And she says, how long can it take you to get up here? I'm driving a 63 Ford Falcon station wagon that had a rear main seal that leaked oil as fast as you put it in there. It just leaked oil, and it was just a disaster. And from here to Santa Barbara in a 63 Falcon wagon, no air conditioning. It was in January, but still no air conditioning with an AM radio. Remember those days? With a wheel that was like this big, you know. And I says, I got to get my stuff. She says, what stuff? I put my stuff in storage. I said, but somebody broke into my car the other night. That's why I put my stuff in storage. She says, did you lose anything? I says, yeah, I lost my ice skates. She says, what did you bring ice skates to California for? I go, I don't know. She goes, do you skate? I go, no. You know? But that's what I remembered. They stole my ice skates. And I literally was looking for my ice skates. And I was walking downtown looking for my ice skates. This was what had become so important to me. And she says, can you get up here? I said, it's going to take me a little, just get up here. And I remember driving up to Santa Barbara, and I had gone to Pep Boys to get used oil because I need the oil. Literally would pour out, so every once in a while the red light would flash red, danger, danger, danger. And I'm driving up, I pull over, right, and I put more oil in. And then it would roll because the smoke would just roll up the back of the car. And these people going by in these really fancy cars were blowing their horn. I'm in trouble, red light, danger, 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 you know. And I finally get up to Santa Barbara, and I go, oh, my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? She says, we made an appointment for you at the Alcoholics Anonymous Central Office. I went, you're kidding, an appointment? Wow. We don't need appointments, you know that, right? So I went down and I met this guy named Howard. I walked into the room and he said, what's going on? I said, my sister-in-law said I could come down. There was an appointment. She said, oh, sit down. What's going on? He sat in the chair and he rocked. And he told me his name was Howard and he just retired and he was giving back what was given to him. I thought, this is crap. What are you talking about? He goes, you know, I was a merchant marine. I was a captain of a Shell Oil Company ship and I just retired after 29 years of sobriety. And I instantly had a resentment at him. First time I met the guy. He says, you seem angry. I says, well, I wanted to be in merchant marines. Well, I didn't have that chance. He said, did you go to the academy? I go, no, I didn't want to put myself through that. He goes, so what are you mad at me for? I go, well, I guess I'm, it was just like my whole life flashed. And he says, tell me what's going on. And I don't know if I told my story. I don't know what, you know, it's like kind of going to confession for the first time. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I touched somebody. I touched this. I shouldn't have touched that. I wish I had touched that, you know, and it's like just kind of manufacturing stuff just so the guy can say, go five Hail Marys and get out of here. So I remember telling this guy my story, and I don't know what I said. And I was kind of looking for, it's papers, you're good, go in. You're Alcoholics Anonymous, you're here. You're perfect, you're a perfect candidate for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, so what do you think? He says, what do I think about what? I says, am I an alcoholic? He says, I don't know. What? He says, I know I'm an alcoholic. And I know people coming in and out of here are alcoholics because I know them going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. He says, you're the only one that can say whether you're an alcoholic or not. And I went, man, his name was Howard. I said, Howard, I'm an alcoholic. What do I do? He says, good. He said, that's it, man. You go to meetings. What kind of meetings? We go to AA meetings. What is that like? I says, he says, you got some fear in your life. I'm not afraid of nothing. We can see right through your fear. Trust me, we can see it. And he goes, there's a speaker meeting tonight at the Alano Club. He says, I don't usually go there, but I'd love to go there. Why don't you go? He says, we have things called speaker meetings. We have things called discussion meetings. We have things called literature meetings. He says, I don't think you need to go to any discussion meetings because I don't think you will discuss anything. I think you will shut down. Go to a speaker meeting and see if you can identify. With what? He said, just show up. So I went home, and my brother Jerry says, what's going on? I said, they want me to go to a meeting. He goes, well, I'll take you to a meeting. I'll be fine. He goes, no, I'm taking you. Little did I know that there was a conversation going on when he had left he called my brother Brian, and Brian goes, you know, Joe can't go anywhere without a drink in his life. He said, you're going to have to take him to the meeting. Jerry goes, well, I'm not an alcoholic. He said, just take him to the meeting. Just see what happens. So we went to the meeting, and it was a big speaker meeting. The guy liked telling his story, and I'm sitting there, and I'm going, this is the biggest bunch of BS I've ever heard in my life. And I looked over at Jerry, and he was crying. I'm going, what's wrong? He said, this is unbelievable stuff. I go, what are you hearing? He goes, this is great stuff, Joe. This is exactly what, I don't need this. And I just listened to this guy tell this story like I'm telling it. I'm going, this is ridiculous. This is unbelievable. And at the end of the meeting, they said, okay, we're going to circle up and we're going to say the Lord's Prayer. Never heard that term in my life. Me and my brother are sitting in the middle of this room, and everybody is circled up around us. And we're in the middle going, and somebody goes, come up here and join. So we get up into the room, and then somebody grabbed my hand. Oh, Christ, don't do that to me. Grab my hand. And then they started saying the Lord's Prayer. And I hear a sniffle brother next to me. He's crying his eyes out with the Lord's Prayer going on. I'm going, Jesus Christ, what's happened here? This is ridiculous. I'm never, ever coming back to this again. And something happened. I don't know when. I don't know whether it was the fact that he took me, the fact that people said hello to me, the fact that Howard said, just show up, Joe. I don't know what happened, but I have not stopped coming to Alcoholics Anonymous since that moment. I have not given up. There's been moments in my sobriety that I would just totally have just traded everything for a drink. Everything for a drink. And I know you know what that feels like. You know, there's times when you get so riddled with that 100 forms of fear and self-delusion, and it's just really just an awful way of life if that's the way you're going to live. And that process of uncovering, discovering, and discovering, and coming in here and getting a sponsor. And I got my first sponsor was this angry, angry, bitter old, he was a wonderful man. He was just, He got me to some place. I don't know what. I was so resistant to change. I was so resistant to change. And I think I have to talk about that a lot because that the resistance to change, I wanted you guys to change. I really wanted you to change. I didn't want to. How many times have I worked with people that I'm sponsoring them? They go, why am I the one that always has to change? We all say that. Why am I the one? Why doesn't she? Why doesn't he? I am not sponsoring him or her. And they, I don't even know who they are. You know, they are everywhere. I know that because everybody's talking about them, you know, and they're everywhere, you know. But I go, Mom, I'm talking to you. You're the only one that I can help. I can help you uncover. I can help you. I can lead you towards the water. I can lead you towards a power that's greater than yourself, that fundamental idea of God. I didn't like the word God. You know what they told me to do? Spell it backwards. I love dogs. I know you do, yeah. But think about it. It's just really, if I take anything that's negative, most great spiritual gurus in Alcoholics Anonymous will just help you to turn it over. Turn it over. Turn it around. Do something other than focus on the negative. And I go, that's a simple way of life. This is Bill talks about getting rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. Where did I think the fourth dimension of existence was? In La Jolla. Right? I thought it was a material thing. I thought it was a place. And I remember talking to my old sponsor, and he goes, I hate to tell you this, Joe, but it's probably at the basement of the Mission Hills Monday night meeting. The basement. I go, yeah. He goes, that's where you're going to find the fourth dimension. But that's like being right here. He goes, yeah, you just got to show up. And I says, oh, my God, I can't. Why? And he says, find that God. I go, that God. I get resentment. He says, that's the God of your childhood. If you can make amends to the God of your childhood, you'll be able to find a God that you can do business with now. I went, oh, wow, forgive. The St. Francis prayer says, in order to be forgiven, we have to forgive. No, I want to be forgiven, but you have to forgive. And in that forgiveness, that old idea that I'm trying to let go of. And he goes, Joe, listen, and this is 36 years ago, and it happened, a lot of it didn't stop to happen in COVID, that most of the meetings that most of us went to was usually in the basement of a church. And I swear to God, every time I would go to a basement of a church, most everybody's bitching and moaning about a church. They're bitching and moaning about a pastor. They're bitching and moaning about something of their childhood. And then some old timer will go, do you know where you are right now? Yeah, I'm in a basement of a church. And he would go, the church is not mad at us. I go, oh, my God. They've opened the doors. They have all. And think about the history. Think about the spiritual people that have helped Alcoholics Anonymous get to where it is today. From every walk of life, If you go to Vancouver, you were talking about Vancouver. You go up there, you're going to see people from hundreds of different countries and nationalities and religious. It's just crazy. It's just crazy when you see the flag ceremony coming out, and especially with what's going on right now. You see the flag ceremony coming out, and there's Israel. They announced now from the country of Israel, there's the Israeli flag, and right after that is the country of Iran. Right after the country of Israel, they walk out together. God knows what's going to happen with all this sort of stuff that's going on in the world, you know. But think about the Sam, our buddy Sam, used to go over to Iran every year. He actually just came back. He did a tradition study, but he'd go over to Iran years ago. He started been doing it for about 20 years on his own dime. And he goes, it's just the most amazing thing. He says, in a mosque, a woman cannot sit next to a man in a mosque. They don't. They actually physically separate them in the mosque. The women in their room and the men are in their room. He said, with the exception of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Isn't that crazy when you think about it? It's just like, this is something special. This is something special. Years ago, I was listening to a tape of the Dalai Lama. And they would, if you've ever listened to it, he's like the most loving, compassionate, human, funny guy in the world. I'll tell you this one story, then I'll go back to the original story. If you really want to get spiritual, just Google the Dalai Lama farting. Farting, excuse me, F-A-R-T-I-N-G, farting. That's a hard word for a guy from Boston to say. We fart, trust me. What is the fart? Yeah. Google the Dalai Lama farting. It's the funny, it's about a minute and 30 seconds, and he's talking with remember Bishop Desmond Tutu? They're on a stage talking about spiritual development, and for some reason he starts talking about being on a plane. And I go, I'm on a plane coming back from India or something like that, and every once in a while I have to pass some gas. So I look around the plane, and I go up on one cheek, and I whoop. And nobody notices, and I go up and do it again. And he's talking, I'm going, oh, my God. Can you imagine the Pope standing up in St. Peter's going, I had a fart the other day, and I just want to tell you guys about this. But it just made so much sense to me. It made so much sense because years ago I was listening to a tape of him, and they were having a great spiritual conversation, and they said to the Dalai Lama, "What do you think is the most spiritual movement going on?" He, without missing a beat, he said, "Alcoholics Anonymous." He said, "What? Alcoholics Anonymous." He said, "They practice love and they practice service." He says, "They don't preach, they practice. They practice amongst themselves love and service." He says, "That's what most religions preach." He says, "Some of us can love, but we can't serve. Others of us can serve, but we can't love." He said, "What Alcoholics Anonymous has done with their circle and triangle, they've taken that circle and they brought the love and service into their main way of life." He goes, "Oh, without a doubt, it's the most magical thing." And I remember telling that story for a long time, and I couldn't find the tape. I couldn't find that. Everybody would go, "Well, where did you?" I go, I don't know. I can't. I know I heard it. And they go, "Well, you shouldn't be talking about it if you don't know." I forget. There's a archivists are very, very sensitive. They want to know they want the fact. Where did that happen? And I go, "I don't know." And they says, "Well, you shouldn't talk about that." I was up at a conference a couple of years ago up in L.A., and I said, "I don't know why I'm going to tell you this story, because I stopped telling it, but I'm going to tell you this story because it just feels like I need to tell it." And I told that same story I just told you guys, and I go, "I don't have any proof that that happened. It's just, it's in my memory, and please don't come up and ask me for the proof because I don't have it." And I let it go. And this guy came walking up towards me that was about 6'6". You know those kind of people that are just, that God chiseled them? Just this specimen of a man that come walking up to me with this smile. And I go, what's going on? He goes, "You told that story about the Dalai Lama." I go, "Yeah, please don't." He goes, no, relax. He goes, "When the Dalai Lama came to Los Angeles several years ago, I was his personal bodyguard. And I was there when he told that story." He says, "You can continue to tell that story because it happened." And I was like, "Oh, my God, you're kidding, you know." And it was just like, just think about it. What is the most spiritual movement? Alcoholics Anonymous. Not a religious movement, a spiritual movement. The ritual of AA. It's like coming here. It's like, that's why we ask you what your name is. Or Corey, he said, "That's my name." You know, that's the ritual. It starts with, "Is there anybody here under than 30 days of sobriety?" "Yeah, that's me." "Well, I don't know why I'm telling you this." You know, and some boob like me will come up and say, "Hey, man, I'm so glad you're here. Where are all the other meetings you're going to?" You know what we do after the meeting? "What is it?" "We go to Denny's." "Oh, wow, that really excites me." You know, it's like... Remember those days when we all fill up Denny's till 3 o'clock in the morning, eating moon over my hammy and sodas, and just like, oh my God, it was just the waitresses just loved us because we would bust our own tables, we would leave them stupid tips, we would be there, and you know, people would be crying and laughing and heckling and all that. I think Denny's might have got more people sober than AA from years ago, because there was a great fellowship. That's really what we start to crave, like we crave the alcohol and the drugs. That's the thing that we try to get you to do, just to crave just one more meeting, just one more share, just one more person that's going to give you just a little bit of hope. Just a little bit of hope. We're not going to give you all the hope, because you're going to have to find that yourself. You got to find that yourself. And that's really that stuff that's deep down inside of you. And I used to hate that term, the fundamental idea of God. And I remember asking Milt, when I said, "Milt, I hate that term fundamental because it just reminds me of religious and fundamentalists and all this." He says, "Oh, my God." He says, "Break the word down." Everybody, these guys are just like, I go, "Break it down to what?" He goes, "There's two words in there." I go, "What?" He goes, "Fun and demental." "You're focusing on demental. Focus on the fun, you know?" And then he said, "If you turn that word backwards, what does it spell?" "Fun?" He goes, "Yeah." He says, "It spells enough. It's enough." I go, "Oh my God, is it that simple?" He said, "Yeah, you're going to focus on the negative all the time. All the time, Joe. And negativity will just get you down. It'll get you into that pit of despair. It'll get you away from the here and now. You'll be in the future or be in the past. Nothing's good enough. Nothing, you can't. Just be yourself." Oh, Milt, I can't be myself. Just be yourself. Just, it's going to take some time. And time is the illusion in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the one thing we want more of. We want more of. We want more sobriety. We want more time in the course of a day. But it's just like, you just get right here and right now. Just get right here and right now, and you'll enjoy it. You'll enjoy it. And just, I've had some health issues over the years, and it's just been just one after the other. Right now I'm dealing with the prostate cancer, and I thought they were going to do something, and they don't want to do it. They said, "Well, you're too far advanced," and they go, "We got to get this, oh, God damn it." So anyway, I had 6 years ago, my heart blew out, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. This is just like ridiculous. And I remember sitting in the hospital. It was just like, I went into the hospital with this heart condition. I'm an inpatient person, I'm impatient, right? I'm an impatient person. And I remember saying to the doctor, what am I going to get out of here? He says, get out of where? I said, get out of here. He says, oh, you'll be in here for at least a week. I went, what? Oh, come on, you know, and it's just crazy. And all of a sudden, AA people start finding out. I'm in a heart ward up in UCSD, and these nurses would come in, and they go, you know, you can't have all these people in your room. And I go, you can't keep them out. Trust me, I can't keep them out. I said, I know they're the biggest bunch of whack jobs you guys have probably ever met in your life, but you can't keep them out. And they would go, well, you can't be in this room. They can't be in this room. I says, put a sign on the door. They won't read it. Trust me, they won't. They'll come in here. They'll walk right past you and go, nice sign, you know. And then a half an hour later, the doctor comes in and the room was full. And I said, oh, my God, the doctor's going to. He goes, I'm so glad to see so many people in this room. I go, why? He says, because I can feel the love. He says, that every other room in this ward, there's nobody visiting the people in here. He said, these people will be in here for a long time. You're going to get out of here well before. There was one guy, Glenn Miller, God rest his soul, he passed away. He lived up in North County, and he found out I was in the hospital, and he didn't know how to get a hold of me, so he called every hospital in San Diego to find out where I was. And this nurse, and Glenn, God bless him, was a whack job. He passed away during COVID. But this nurse came in, and she says, oh, my God, we just got off the phone with this really angry man named Glenn Miller, and he was wondering if I could tell him you were here. And I go, yeah, you can tell him I'm here. And he was there lickety-split. And he came in at 6 o'clock in the morning and stayed till 9 o'clock at night, sitting there going, how you doing? You doing all right? Can I get you anything? Jesus, shut up, will ya? Yeah? And he printed off this 28-page thing about what I was going through. And he wanted me to read it. And I skimmed it, and I threw it in the trash. And the next morning, he was there at 6 o'clock. And I went, oh, hi. He goes, who threw that in the trash? I go, what? He goes, I read it. You did not. And I was like, oh, my God, you know. But that was love. That's really all it is love. You know, it's just love. And that's the only thing any of us really ever want in here. And my sponsor has a great acronym for love. I don't know where he got it from, but it's listen, overlook, value, and encourage. And think about it. That's what happened. When I'm talking or when you're in a meeting, everybody else is listening. You're listening. There's a Catholic priest, he's dead now, Thomas Keating, that I've been listening to, and he said, silence is the first language of God. Everything else is just an interpretation. Silence is the language of God. And I think that's that listen, and overlook is the O, and we overlook the things that you can't identify with. You know, you don't have to identify with my story or anybody else's story. And value those things that are really just become really, really important to your recovery. And encourage people to keep coming back. Encourage people to dream bigger than they ever had in their life. Encourage people to go to more meetings. Encourage people to go to the Verde Valley Roundup. And it's really a wonderful little roundup out in the middle of Cottonwood, Arizona. It's just this goofy little roundup. If you can go to these places and just show up, get in the car with a whole bunch of people, take a ride, just take a go and get in the car and go, and you'll be amazed at what happens when you surrender to that stuff. And this music that happens in the car, it's just like, oh my God. And you get the guy that's angry and bitter and resentful, and by the end of the trip he's laughing, he's joking, and he's like, where are we going tomorrow? You know, it's just like that's what AA is all about. It doesn't have to be just this we're not a glum lot. That's a wonderful word. We're not a glum lot. Sometimes you can go to a lot of meetings and go, would anybody like to share? And then you hear it go, yeah, I really would like to share, you know, and it's just 10 minutes of a diatribe, you know, just Jesus Christ, man, get over yourself. Oh, my God almighty, you know. And then you get somebody that turns it around, somebody that stands up and says, this is an AA meeting, not an AB meeting. And then everybody goes, what the hell's an AB meeting? He says, I don't know, but it's just not an AA meeting. You know, just not an AA meeting. An AA meeting has the solution to the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And the way we get that is we tell our story, what we were like, what happened, and what we're like now. Hopefully somebody can identify. Hopefully somebody will just keep coming back. Hopefully somebody will hear how it works read. And you go, oh, my God, I never heard it read that way. somebody will hear, you'll hear different things. Trust me, my sponsor got me to close my eyes when How It Works being read, and it's just, you're going to hear it read differently. People misread words, they miss the period, they don't put the numbers in. Oh my God, I was at a meeting this morning, and the guy was, he was doing the 12 traditions, and he didn't put the numbers in. You thought they were going to lynch this guy. Jesus, what? It was just like crazy. I go, relax. The guy had 47 days, and they wanted him to be perfect. I gave it to the newcomer because I wanted to hear him say anonymity. I love anonymity. We're all going, here he goes. Yeah, you got it. You know, it's just the greatest thing in the world. We're just the biggest. Yeah, we don't take yourself too damn seriously here. You know, really, and you can't be super sober. You know, you can't be super sober. You just got to be yourself. If you think you're super sober, you're gonna miss the beauty of the forest. You're really gonna miss that. You know, it's just fall. Listen to the music till you can understand the words. And this will be the last thing I say. It was like I heard this the other day. It was, you know, it's kind of when I was talking about the noise before the meeting. The noise. You think about that there's a and it's a volume. It's very loud, and it's kind of like a symphony orchestra. If you've ever gone to the symphony, get there before the conductor comes out, and just before everybody's tuning their instrument, and it's really cumbersome. They're all tuning the drums, the tubas, the violins, the cellos, the oboes. They're all hitting a different note, and it just sounds ridiculous. And all of a sudden, somebody walks up on stage, and everybody sits up, just like we're going to start the meeting tonight. And all of a sudden, they just start playing the symphony. And I think that's what Alcoholics Anonymous, for me, is. It's this orchestration of a symphony of beautiful, what we were like, what happened, and what we're like now. We don't all hit the same note at the same time, but there's a sweet spot in everybody's share. And that sweet spot is the silence. And the silence isn't in my head. The silence is in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. Ron Wynn used to say, listen for the silence in a room. That's identification. Listen for the silence. Don't be afraid of the silence. Liz was talking about the meditation. Meditation is you. If you're learning to meditate, your head is just going to take you places that you never, ever knew existed. Enjoy the ride. You know, enjoy that ride. Because there'll be times when it's just absolute beauty. Absolute beauty. John, thank you for asking me to do this thing, man. I love being sober. It's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And it happens every moment of every day. Every moment of every day. It's not something you're going to get, and it's something you get, and you give it away, and you give it away, and you give it away. That's what we call back in Boston, wicked, wicked pissa. And it's kind of like that term, indescribably wonderful. What does it mean? I don't know. But it's something that you feel. It's something you experience. And I think that's what we do. We experience love. We experience service. And we give that way to other people. And we get rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. Hope you guys come back to hear Pam next week. She's a trip, too. Thanks, everybody. Ciao.
Let's thank Joe, and we hope you'll visit us soon. Thank you, Joe. I would also like to thank the residents and the house and the Women's Auxiliary for a fantastic dinner. We will now rise and close in the usual manner. Thank you.
Come on, Gary, man.
Okay, let's close with the Our Father.